My history with the movie is, oh, it's an email from Total Wine.
Yes. Important message.
Good job.
Do you want to sponsor?
Yes. What? Yes. I should get them to sponsor.
We did just say their name.
Yes, we did.
Total Wine. I'm actually drinking a beer that was purchased at Total Wine.
I am drinking a cider from Total Wine because they don't just do wine. They do totally everything.
Well, I believe their name is Total Wine and More.
And More. Yeah, kind of like Bed Bath and Beyond.
Yeah. Another sponsor. Ooh. Potential right there.
Oh, man. I could take in all Target. My $10 gift card. I don't know if Target's going to take us, but we do swear.
Bed Bath & Beyond. They love swearing.
Yes.
Vulgar people at Bed Bath & Beyond. They're vulgarians.
They have a fuck pillow.
They do. Who doesn't this day and age?
True. Welcome to The Great 80s, the great 80s movie debate, where we see if the movies from the 80s still hold up today. Whether you're a child of the 80s, a fan of classic films, or just a movie geek, you've come to the right place. Today we're going to be discussing 1988's A Fish Called Wanda, directed by Charles Crichton and starring Sir John Cleese, Jamie Lee Curtis, Kevin Klein, and Michael Palin. My name is Christy, and I'm joined by an illustrious panel of 80s experts, Julie.
Hello.
And Mike.
Don't call me stupid.
I was waiting for somebody.
Oh, I've been sitting on it all day.
So on The Greaties, we like to take a moment to find out each panelist's history with the film that we're talking about. So everybody knows where everybody's coming from. So Mike,
yes.
What is your history with A Fish Called Wanda?
My history with A Fish Called Wanda dates back to waiting for my dad to get home from work in like 1991. 1990, that time, that right around that time. So I was, at the time, I'm going to date myself so y'all know how old I am. I was 9 or 10 years old when I first saw this movie, which is definitely too young.
Yeah.
This movie is not appropriate for children. But my dad would come home late from work, and I would usually wait up for him because my mom would go to sleep and my sisters would go to sleep. So we would either watch Quantum Leap in reruns, which is, I love that show because of that. But also one time my dad decided, hey, let's watch this movie, A Fish Called Wanda. And the things I got, I liked. The things I didn't get, I didn't get. And my dad was kind of like, just, you know, don't tell your mom that we watched some of this. But yeah, that was like, so that movie means a lot to me emotionally. But also, it started my lifetime love affair with Kevin Klein as an actor. Mm-hmm. Reason I became an actor was because of him. And yeah, that movie is one of my first, like, it was one of those first, like, benchmark movies.
Cool. Julie, your turn.
My history with the movie is actually a date night with Mike. He kept talking about this movie when we had first started dating and how much he loved it. And at the time, I was like, oh, I loved that movie. When I was a little kid, we would watch this movie together as a family all the time. Like, I loved it so much. And he would always kind of give me an odd look.
I was like, your whole family watched that movie together?
And I was like, yeah, we loved it. And so we decided to watch the movie together, and we're maybe not even through the credits. And I realized that I had confused the movie title with Splash.
Oh.
So I had never seen A Fish Called Wanda until that night.
That actually makes me feel a little more comfortable.
Yeah. And I am sure it made Mike feel more comfortable with my family as well.
Yeah, pretty much.
So that was it. We watched it, and watching any Kevin Klein movie with Mike is an experience. It involves trivia, being smacked in the arm repeatedly and said, ooh, watch this, listen to this.
Anything you watch with me, especially if it's something that I'm passionate about, you can't be distracted. Like if we're sitting on the couch watching something and, like, you know, she'll pull out her phone, I'll be like, no, you got to watch this part. This part's really important because this part sets us up a part later in the movie. And if it's a Kevin Klein movie, forget it. I'm going to be pushing you to pay super close attention.
Gotcha. Good to know.
We got to see him live.
We
saw Present Laughter on Broadway. It was a Noel Coward play, and Kevin Klein is 70 years old, and he moved like he was 40, and I mean that as a 36-year-old who can't move as well as he could.
Yeah.
Like, so, yeah, he's still amazing.
I just feel like, in general, anything he does, he makes appear completely natural and effortless.
Easy.
Even when it's the most absurd choice.
Yeah. My history with this movie, I honestly, I get a little hazy in these shows because I don't remember when I saw this movie, but I know that it's always been a part of my life, definitely since college. I have been a huge Kevin Kline fan since Pirates of Penzance.
Oh, yeah.
That is what hooked me.
That chest and, hair.
Oh, God, yes. Fuck Rex Smith. Fuck him in the ass. Kevin Kline is where it's at. And just he's so charismatic and he draws you in so much that I think my husband is a big fan of January Man.
Oh, great movie.
And I was like, oh, he's done something other than Pirates of Penzance. Oh, I'll have to look at this. And so I think we rented it and I just was amazed. I watched it and watched it until we had to return it. It was late and I had to pay a late fee. But then it's one of those movies that if you see it, you stop and watch it.
Yep.
And you have to watch the end of it. So this movie, and it's so funny because Dave and I kind of got into a little discussion about it. Unfortunately, he couldn't be with us, but we got into a discussion and he loves Kevin Kline as well, but does not care for Jamie Lee Curtis in this movie.
Really?
And I'm like, how can you not like Jamie Lee Curtis?
Interesting.
Okay. I do not.
God, I wish he was here. I really want to hear his perspective on it.
Yes, because he just kind of texted me this vague text that said, JMC, me.
After rewatching it, I have questions about the way her character was written. But as an actor, I love her in general. But also this movie was one of the first things I saw her in as well. You know, so, and of course, she was one of the first crushes. Of course, I was at an age where girls were starting to become interesting. And she's definitely in lingerie in this movie. So,
she is gorgeous in this movie.
Oh, yeah.
And she rocks short hair.
Yeah.
She does.
I every time I think about growing my hair out, I go, Jamie Lee Curtis. I could eat yogurt and Activia, and I would still look okay with short hair.
She's doing another Halloween movie.
I know.
It's going to be great. I'm on board.
It is going to be. Anything she does has been really nice. I'm a huge fan of True Lies.
Great
True Lies
movie.
Is one of my the first time, I think it's one of the first DVDs I bought.
Oh, nice.
One of the first Blu-rays I bought.
Oh, yeah.
Because I love her in that movie. But we will focus back on A Fish Called Wanda.
Yeah.
Okay, so we start out this movie with we're in Ken's flat.
Mm-hmm.
And we're looking at his fish.
Yep.
I have to say, it did inspire me when I saw it to get a fish tank.
Hello, Wanda.
But then I realized fish are work.
It's a lot of work to have fish. And that's Ken's character. You find out throughout the movie that he is a big animal lover.
Yes.
It starts off right away showing him caring for fish, which people think are easy, but it's not. You got to watch pH balances, and you got to feed them.
Especially they're tropical fish. They're not just freshwater.
Yeah, it's like a saltwater tank.
He's got an ass load of fish in there.
Oh, yeah.
And they're all different kind of fish. So.
Oh, yeah. And you just kind of watch them as they're swimming around, and that's how we start the credits, and that kind of gives you a little bit of an insight onto the complexity of what's going to happen because there are fish coming out of different holes.
It's interesting because I think before that part in the credits, they have like the quick shots of everybody. Like you see John Cleese in court and then you see Kevin Kline waking up from a nap and shooting his alarm clock.
Yes.
and then Jamie Lee Curtis taking pictures with her purse. But then it settles down and gets calm with the fish tank, which I think kind of matches Michael Palin's character of Ken. He's kind of the anchor of the group in a way, which as a thought.
This is probably a larger conversation, but like for me, Ken is the movie. Like I adore everything about his character, everything about the way Michael Palin plays him. And just like he is the connector between so many secondary characters as well.
True. He can't really get the sentences out, but
His stutter.
But it makes the moments when his stutter is quote unquote fixed so fantastic.
Mm-hmm. So do you think in today's world you could have a character that stutters like
nope.
that? No, I don't think so either.
And we are way too even he got so much blowback
from
this.
Did.
He had to start a stuttering school.
Yeah, he did. And his performance of it was very realistic, from what I understand.
Because his father had a horrible stammer, so he drew back on his family. But the fact that he got so much blowback that he had to feel like he used that to move like a charity forward. But still, today,
Oh, no, you couldn't do it at all.
I think we figure out that most of the movies that were made in the 80s could never be made today because of sensitivities or budget or...
A PG-13 movie in the 80s would be an X-rated movie nowadays.
Yeah.
Like, and that's sad, but I get it, but I also don't like it.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
There's several elements in the movie that... I mean, you're rooting... For someone to cheat on their significant, well, two people to cheat on their, you're rooting for them.
Yeah.
Because those are the people that are, you want to be together. You have Jamie Lee Curtis's character using her sexuality to get ahead.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, and she's got three men on the hook, essentially. Not Ken. Ken was never really on the hook with her.
Although, briefly,
she kept him there.
And the fact that he named the fish Wanda.
Yeah, that's a good point. So she was, we don't know. Like, I don't think she would ever sleep with Ken.
No, but she knows how he feels about her.
Yeah.
And she uses it.
Oh, very true.
Side note, excellent use of on the hook.
Oh, didn't even realize I made a pun there with the fish called
good.
Wanda.
Very nice. Very nice.
Yeah.
You got reeled into that one.
I also love about this movie, you don't know. They don't tell us, spoiler alert if you haven't seen it, they don't tell you how this group comes together.
No.
There's never like a, oh, by the way, Wanda knows Ken, or Wanda knows George from this, and George knows Ken from this. It's just like, these people are together. They're going to
do this.
They're going to commit a heist, a jewel heist, and that's all you need to know about their past, which I love, because it's just like, this is where we are. You don't need to know how they came together. They're together.
Well, I think, because this was written by John Cleese.
Yes.
I think it's almost indicative of a lot of Python things. You don't care what the history is. It's just there.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter why the fish slapping guys do this.
Nope.
They slap each other with fish. That's all that matters.
The knights who are called need. That's it. You don't need to know why. Mm-hmm.
Rewatching it also, you can see tons of Python. You can see the Python influence in a lot of the movie too.
Yeah.
Like, there's a scene where Jamie Lee Curtis leaves his office when he's a lawyer, and this old man walks in and he just turns around and goes, "Hi!" And it just felt very Python. Like one of the many moments that just felt the whole Michael Palin with the dogs thing, which I'm sure we'll talk about, had a Python energy to it. Like, and it's such a great, there's a lot of that Python feel to it.
Yeah. But it's nice because it does venture outside of the usual Python cast.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, yes, it's John Cleese and Michael Palin, but it's expanded beyond and included a female as strong as Jamie Lee Curtis and Kevin Kline in the mix.
I know that he wrote the role for her.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if he wrote the role for Kevin Kline, but I know when they were working on Silverado together, he told him, "I want to work with you on something."
Yeah.
And it turned out to be this.
Well, and so much, when I was reading about the background of it, so much of these characters, each of them brought their own to each of these. Kevin Kline based his character off of a self-help guru that he read this article about, and he was just like, he was this guy in his 30s and he was so confident with absolutely no reason to be confident.
Oh, God, yeah.
And he took that and ran with it. So a lot of it, I think, may have started out generic, maybe a little bit on the auto side, but Kevin Kline totally took it another direction and took it to the next level. Definitely. But yeah, I did read that he wrote Jamie Lee Curtis's just for Jamie Lee Curtis.
Yeah.
So we meet Wanda, the fish and the woman.
Mm-hmm.
And then we also, we see about their plan to rob the store. And I don't think it's so funny because I had forgotten about
it. Well, it wasn't
George.
A store. It was a bank, I think.
I think
it was a bank
boxes.
Where the safe deposit, not the safe deposit, but the jewels were there. They wind up in a safe deposit box.
That's right.
Yeah. What?
I'm getting super excited about talking about this movie.
I feel like in watching it, I had almost forgotten that George was in the movie.
He's
kind of forgettable a little bit, though he's one of the impetuses for the movement of the plot.
Yeah, he's not one of the... I mean, even on the cover of the movie, he's not there. He's not one of the big four, but he is a big, important part of the story. Like, supposedly he developed the plan, and he brought them all in, and then winds up taking the fall for it.
Do we think he made the model?
I think Ken made the model. I think Ken totally made the model. And he probably said to him, "Ken, make this model." And he's like, "Okay." And he just made a cardboard model. Sorry.
You're going to get flack for that.
I'm not going to get flack. The podcast is going to get flack.
We do not,
I'm just a guest.
We do not have the money to start a school for stuttering.
I was doing an impersonation.
Unless Total Wine sponsors us.
Yes. I don't mean to offend anyone if I did, but I think Ken made it at George's request. Okay. Definitely.
He did a really good job. I liked dioramas back when I was in elementary school. I think that was at least an A.
I did notice as watching it yesterday, actually, because we watched it last night. It's like a Clorox, like sort of the powder bleach box is what it is.
Yeah.
Or Ajax or something like that. I watched it and I thought to myself, I think maybe Ken was in a rush when he made it. Like, I think he would have painted it. I feel like Ken would have done that.
He would have had little miniatures.
Yeah. He just didn't have time to like paint the outside.
He wanted more detail.
Yeah. He does so much because like he tells him to get a car at one point and get diplomatic plates. And it's like, Ken does a lot.
Ken works his ass out through it.
And he's taking care of fish.
Yeah. Who takes care of the fish when Ken's not there?
I'm assuming Ken is always there.
Ken doesn't need a day job. Because Ken.
Yeah, what does Ken do?
He has a pretty nice flat, too.
He does. He's a great place.
It's kind of like Friends, where you can never figure out how they afford that place.
Well, I mean, I guess
don't think this is their first heist, guys.
Oh,
yeah,
no.
we can assume that Ken and George have done this before, and maybe Wanda as well.
And they do They completely invest their trust in anything Ken is assigned to do.
Oh, yeah.
Ken has, you feel like, even though we don't have a backstory for him, Ken's got some history of being really good at what he does, which is pretty much everything.
And I feel like they do a good job of giving all the characters that respect. Mm-hmm. Maybe not George so much, but like Otto is a weapons man and an assassin.
Mm-hmm.
He's an idiot. But when it comes to interrogating and killing people, he is great at what he does.
Yes.
Wanda is obviously a great manipulator, and she can convince people. She could sell a ketchup popsicle to a woman in white gloves.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's what she does. Like, and Ken, of course, is the procurement man who gets everything you need. So, like, even though they are inept in other places, they're all, like, whatever they're assigned to do, you're like, yep, these people are perfect at what they do.
Yeah. So we go ahead and we go to the actual heist. Now, at any point, how did anybody believe that Otto was her brother? How? I mean, now given George, Ken always kind of suspects, but George, you'd think George was a little bit smarter.
I don't think it's that he's not smart. I think he's so just like arrogant and singularly focused that he doesn't care about the other men because he assumes that Wanda is so completely enamored with him.
And he probably uses foreign words. He probably speaks in some language that he's convinced has her totally snowed.
Well, at one point in the movie, he quotes Oscar Wilde and she kisses him like, oh, that was cute. So I'm wondering if he doesn't speak foreign languages and she just placated him that whole time.
Huh? That is true.
But yeah, I think Julie's right. I think like George is so selfish that he doesn't see the forest for the trees.
No.
And I think Otto is the same way. I think Otto is very much a self-involved guy and didn't see the writing on the wall that Wanda was going to do this to him.
True. And I think she kind of seeks out those men with a blind spot.
Mm-hmm.
That's her job. She's a grifter. She can do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But let's see. So they go to the robbery. The scene with him and the bow and arrow. Arrow gun?
Crossbow.
Crossbow. Got that on the second take.
Yeah, he did. He got it on the second take, and that was Kevin Kline doing that. He's just too talented for this world.
But that other actor who has the apple on his head, do you shit your pants when you're like, wait, no, I'm glad you have a Tony, sir, but
not an Oscar yet.
How adept are you at shooting a crossbow?
And did they ever just go, hey, let's just shoot the apple and see what happens? Like, I probably not, but
Something that I did appreciate it's a brief robbery. It's enough that we see it happen. I feel like so often in movies, they need to make things so elaborate so that you as an audience member believe it wholeheartedly. And I'm like, I'm here for the movie, guys. You don't need to prove to me scientifically and technology-wise without a doubt that you can rob this bank.
Like Ocean's 11?
Yeah.
Where,
sorry, Ocean's 11, but yeah.
I love Ocean's 11. It's super fun. But yeah, it's again, it's that whole mentality of the same thing with the four actors. We don't know how they came together. We don't need to know how they pulled it off. Like, they did it.
We don't see that the actual robbery is just like a little blip in the movie.
It's a short really, little montage. It's,
they're already in there. They get in, they get out, and that's it. Yeah. And it's kind of nice that they don't dwell on this because they got so many shots. They got enough to do without having to worry about this robbery. But one thing that they do is they break the glass.
Yep.
And that allows us foreshadowing to have an opportunity happen for George to get framed.
So I was watching when we were watching it, I noticed George isn't the one that kicks the window. Mm. Otto kicks the window.
Hmm.
Like, I know, because George is the one that screams, anyone moves and you're dead. He's the last one out of the room. Mm-hmm. The kick comes from the other side of the window before George is there, mm-hmm. but the glass particles hit his leg. So I'm wondering if that was a part of Otto and Wanda's plan. If you kick the glass at some point or kick, because he probably knew there was glass there. They had to have known. You kick the glass, so hopefully get glass on his leg, or if that was just a coincidence. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But George is not the one that kicks it, which I noticed. So I'm just—that's something I was thinking about.
That like, model could have been really detailed.
Yeah, and I'm sure that I'm sure they've all been in the bank.
Yeah,
you know, so they can see what it looks like, so they can know exactly what they're doing.
Well, we have the pictures from Wanda.
That's true.
Her camera
from
purse.
Her little camera purse.
So we go through the robbery, and we meet the elderly woman with the dogs.
Oh. Miss Eileen Cody.
Now I have seen her on something. I think. I got to think she looks very much like...
As everyone pulls out IMDb.
Yeah, we're all going to IMDb.
She looks almost like the woman that is in Neverending Story.
Oh.
The witch, the wife, before he goes to the Oracle.
Oh, Urgle?
Oh, Urgi.
I'm Ingvar.
Urgle.
She's Urgle.
Oh my gosh.
I don't know if that's her.
She's also...
Is. You're right, that's her.
Oh!
It's right here. I just got her up on IMDb. She's Urgle from Neverending Story. I did not know that.
Oh, she's also Finn Raziel from...
I can't believe that's
Finn.
Her.
Ugh, can't pronounce it right. But she's also from Willow.
Because I kept looking at her going, she looks so familiar. And then I just kept thinking of, it's a scientific speciality.
I didn't even put that together. I'm usually good at that stuff. Oh, now I can see it. Now I'm just looking at her like, yep, I see it. Oh, because I'm not picturing her. I'm picturing Carol Kane from Princess Bride. That's who I'm picturing right now.
I love the way they introduce her because her sort of just like walk across the screen. It just really looks like they are setting up the environment. There's nothing like pointing at her to say, this woman's going to be a key plot point to this movie. So it's just really funny, and she's just so salty.
Oh, yes. I love her. I love that character.
She is just, and those little dogs, and they're the little yappy Yorkie dogs that you're like, oh.
And it's also horrible. Like Julie said, we're rooting for adulterers. We're also rooting against a sweet old lady and her dogs. Like, I didn't want her to live. I felt terrible.
You wanted Michael Palin to succeed.
I wanted him to succeed because he was so sad sack about what he had to do. Like, are we jumping ahead too much? Or?
No.
Yeah, because, he got the order to kill her because she identified George as the guy who was nearby. And just, like, watching Michael Palin's reaction when Otto was picking on him about it.
Yeah.
And knowing, like, oh, he can't kill anybody. I hope he gets it. I hope he kills her. Like,
I hope he proves him wrong.
And that's a great acting ability on Michael Palin's part and great writing because it was like, we are rooting for this character to murder an elderly woman.
And you know what's so funny? Because I think we can all agree that the writing on this movie is pretty damn good.
I think it's real tight. It's real tight.
In Michael Palin's diary, he thought it was horrible.
I read that.
He could not stand this script.
Huh.
He wrote that it was the worst script he'd ever read.
Wow.
And he still did the movie.
I would imagine, if he's saying it's the worst script I ever read, I think that I could argue that if I picked up that script and I read it, and I didn't have the visual accompaniment, and I didn't know who was in the movie, I would think this is like a terrible, scattered,
these are like, terrible characters that nobody is going to like.
Yeah.
And they turn these characters that nobody should. You shouldn't like Otto, but you still do.
I can speak from personal experience. I'm sure you probably can too, Julie. about, and then this isn't like, oh, we did something together, but like I've been in shows where I'm like, I don't know if this is going to work. Like, mm-hmm. I'm like, I don't know if it's going to work, if they're going to find it funny or if it's going to work. Cause you just don't know when you read something or even when you rehearse something, like you just don't know.
Yeah.
So I can totally see that.
And especially in the fact that, you know, each of the actors got to contribute to their character, that probably on the page, it's pretty a flat plot point. Okay, we go from mm-hmm. this to this, and they don't get to see the nuances that the other actors are going to bring to these characters. I can understand if you're just looking at it on the page, but it just made me laugh that it's now you look back and you're like, oh, it's greatly written.
Oh, it's brilliant, yeah.
But that's because we know the acted out side of it, not necessarily just the words on the page. So, but the fact that Michael Palin actually put it in his journal.
Yeah.
this is crap. But it's not. But, okay, so we go back and the old lady sees George. And so we know something's going to happen with that.
Mm-hmm.
They do this elaborate thing with the cars.
Yeah, where
they switch cars. And then Ken takes a motorcycle, so there's less people that they're looking for.
They pretty much pull off the perfect heist.
Really? Yeah, they do.
There's nobody looking for them.
Yeah.
There's nobody who knows what they look like, nobody spoke except for George.
Yeah.
And that was a beautiful thing, especially because Ken would be there for 10 minutes.
Yeah, they even made a joke about it earlier on when Ken was trying to say, should I get a big car? And he couldn't get the sentence out. And Otto just says, what if he has to say something during the break-in?
It's just point. So they get away with everything and they put everything in the safe.
Mm-hmm.
And this tiny little car. It was a cute car. I just kept going, oh, that's a cute car.
That's the kind of car I thought we were going to get. We took our honeymoon in Ireland.
Uh-huh.
And when we rented a car from the rental car company was called what, Julie?
Dooley.
Dan Dooley. I was expecting that kind of car and I was terrified. And I never said this out loud until after we got our regular, like kind of nice car. I was like, I was certain we were going to get like this tiny little hatchback with like no space. I was certain of it. And I was like, I don't know how any of our stuff's going to fit in this car.
I mean, I'm 5'4", so I wasn't worried either
way. I'm 6'2", and was like, oh, but then we got this great car and I was like, okay, yeah, everything's going to be fine. But I was convinced it was going to be that kind of like tiny three-door, car that goes like, that's what I was expecting.
And I think that's actually an expectation that I've had for years of watching British television.
Yeah.
That when we actually went to England, I'm like, oh shit, they got Toyotas.
Yeah, that's what it was. Like, I'm like, oh, there's cars that I recognize. Our car was a thing we'd never heard of. In fact, I couldn't find it in the rental lot. And I was cranky because we'd been on an overnight flight and I don't really sleep on planes. And poor Julie's like, what's the matter? I'm like, it's not here. The car's not here. She's like, it is here. You're not looking in the right place. But then I'm like, why can't we just get that Honda? I know what a Honda is. What is this thing?
Is this an Irish brand of car?
Yeah, I had no idea what I was looking for. I was so mad.
So they leave and they're just, everybody's going to lay low for a few days. Everybody takes their separate corners. Mm-hmm. Everybody spreads out. And the last thing we know, loot's in the safe. Everybody goes their separate ways. Then we get to see the true nature of Otto and Wanda's relationship.
Mm-hmm.
That if it is a brother and sister, that is a fucked up family.
That is very, very messed up.
And I can't remember. Is this the one where they have sex?
Not yet.
No, it's
no,
later.
That's after she meets John Cleese.
Yeah, because they yeah. Oh, okay. That's so great.
Whoa, we'll talk about that later.
Yeah.
But
also George moves the loot.
Yes.
And like, I know we were kind of talking how he was so arrogant, like, and how they're all kind of so single-minded. Like, yeah, he didn't trust them either. Like,
yeah.
Nobody trusted anybody except for Ken. Ken trusts Ken. Everybody except for Otto. But
and everybody trusts Ken.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like you could make this like very fascinating diagram of like who trusts who and like Venn diagram it and all of that. But
Ken's in the middle.
I mean, it's apparent from the start that they all plan on double crossing each other. Essentially, yeah. Ken does too because Ken is in it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So he's not the mastermind behind it, but he's obviously been pulled into one double cross.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's Wanda and Otto with their double cross.
Yeah.
It's just not knowing who's going to win, whose double cross is going to be successful, and who's just going to lose.
It's almost like a verbal and emotional farce. Like, minus the doors opening and closing. But, like, yes. The, you know, all the characters are like, I'm going to talk to this guy. Then I'm going to talk to this person. Then I'm going to move over here. It's just, it's such a wonderful thing.
So now they decide they're going to report George, get him in the clink, get him out, and then they're going to go get his stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And George's apartment, I have to say, very Miami. There was a lot of pink in there for England. Just don't expect that. So George pretty much figures as soon as he hears the sirens, the jig is up.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to get taken. And then realizes the glass is on his pants. And then we meet Archie Leach.
The real name of Cary Grant.
Yes.
Yeah. Barrister to the stars.
Because he wanted to get as close as he could to Cary Grant.
Yeah.
That was the closest he could is to name his character that.
That's really cool.
Oh, that is really... We get to talking, and the gentleman that is with him, he's the barrister, but who is the gentleman with him again?
Bartlett? I would get... I don't fully understand it. I think the barrister is not the lawyer. I think a barrister is a lawyer, but I think... that guy is also a lawyer.
Yeah.
Who just works a little closer. I don't fully know.
I was a little confused by that because I'm just sitting there going, well, are there only certain people that can argue in front of the court?
Maybe, but yeah. I don't know British law.
Yeah, but Wanda does.
She pretends.
Acts like she does.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to say, I don't, you know, I like men. However... Jamie Lee Curtis in that little blue dress.
The denim dress.
Oh, my God.
Yep. Get out of town.
And the glasses.
Yeah. Everything about that.
Yeah.
I think I love that little scene before with her and Otto before she goes over to Archie, because I think a lot of times we see in movies where the man is pressuring the woman to use her sexuality or to do all of that. And she says, I'm going to do this. And Otto's not okay with it.
No.
Yeah.
And so I think that in the construct of the movie, it creates a very interesting dynamic between the two of them. But also it's sort of interesting in terms of the context of movies that she's the one that's pushing this.
Oh, I think the one person that has her head screwed on or their head screwed on straight is definitely Wanda. Wanda's driving this movie. She zigs when she has to zig, and she zags when she has to. When the plot changes and she's got to go with it, she is one of the most adaptable characters in this movie. And that's, I mean, it is a fish called Wanda. She is part of the title.
Mm-hmm.
So we get to meet, we get them to meet, and she talks him up about loving the law. And definitely we see that... Archie's not happy in his marriage.
Oh, the scene where we meet the wife.
Oh.
That actress, I don't remember her name, and I feel like we need to say it to be respectful for her amazing performance.
Maria Aitken.
Amazing.
Oh, yeah.
Like, she was, you just didn't like her right from the get-go, but you loved to watch her just emotionally torture him. Like, I loved her so much.
Oh, she it's just this perfect little idyllic world they live in, but it's completely devoid of any passion or love or anything.
Oh, God, nothing there.
It's like it was a political arrangement.
And it's like a passive version of passive aggressiveness. Like,
yes.
She's not even passive aggressive. She's even more passive than that. And just everything she says just chips away at him a little bit more.
Yeah. Like, John Cleese was parodying the traditional English lifestyle in this movie in a lot of ways too, like that, the marriage and the family. And then later on, he has a whole monologue about being English and how it's like, oh, you have to pretend to be proper all the time. Like, he was just doing the send up of his own people this entire movie. And this was a great send up of it.
And of course we are introduced then to Portia.
Portia.
Who's actually John Cleese's daughter.
I know.
Yeah.
Awful, Daddy. I've got to have a new horse.
That's actually his daughter. She's been in a couple of his productions.
I think she also did Fierce Creatures.
She did.
Yes.
All of them were in Fierce Creatures.
Yes, as different characters.
Yeah, even George and the wife, they were all in Fierce Creatures.
But it was not as well received as this movie.
It's not as good. No. I liked it. I've seen it. I mean, if it's a Kevin Kline movie, I'll watch. But Fierce Creatures is not as good. It's just not. Sorry, John Cleese.
And so it's pretty much a stereotypical selfish wife and daughter. He has to work to make them happy. She wants plastic surgery and a new horse. She needs not even fit for the glue factory.
Oh, such a bitch.
So
damn you, Portia.
You really do feel so bad for them. And then Wanda comes to the house and somehow in the melee loses her necklace.
Wait, hold up. We have to go back.
Yes, we have to
go back. Sexy Friday night.
Because we are missing favorite cut scene of going back and forth between Wanda and Otto having sex.
Oh, yes.
And John and Archie and Wendy going to bed because it's just, in my opinion, some of the most beautiful moments of the movie. It's like visually the difference. There's so many great character choices in that moment, but just you also get so much insight into the characters.
Like, oh,
you just
so funny.
See how sad Archie is and also how devoid their marriage is. I mean, Wendy is talking to him from her separate twin bed and he's completely oblivious to everything that she's saying.
And they said one of the parallels, the cool thing about all the different articles I would read about just different parallels to different things that people have done, like the fact that the two separate beds was a Fawlty Towers thing.
Yeah.
That it's little pieces of all of their careers that are in this. And there's a scene where Otto kind of pops up and that's like Halloween.
Michael Myers popping behind her.
So, I mean, there's little pieces of inside jokes that are all over this thing. The scene with them having sex.
Oh, so funny.
I just feel like everything that Kevin Kline does with her boot.
Yes.
like I feel like he received the script and it was like, Otto is sexual with a boot, and Michael Palin read it and was like, this script is shit. And then Kevin Kline was like, let me be brilliant.
Yeah. Oh, it's so great.
Just the deflating and inflating. Yeah. Yep. Oh.
So silly. And like the fact that like his Italian, Kevin Kline's Italian, like he doesn't speak a lot of Italian.
No.
Most of the things he says are food item
menus.
No,
and he had asked John Cleese if he could speak French because he speaks French.
And he's like, no.
He's like, nope.
Italian's funnier. And he's right.
We're doing it. And one of the things that they said is when he starts singing Volare, they freaked out because they didn't have the rights to Volare.
Yeah, and that was a take that like apparently Jamie Lee Curtis was laughing.
Yes.
And like that's why her head is kind of angled down because she's laughing at what Kevin Kline's doing. But yeah, his whole, he did another thing too, like just to harp on Kevin Kline again because we haven't done that enough. He created like Julie said, like taking the characters and making them their own. He created like several things that he repeated throughout the movie that became iconic in a way, like sniffing his armpit whenever he needed a whiff of his own testosterone. That calling, don't call me stupid. Like he would just repeat that, and then don't touch his dick, which comes up on the drive over to Jamie Lee Curtis and Kevin Kline driving over to John Cleese's house. So she can, you know, try to seduce him. Like he just says, don't touch his dick. And that becomes this thing that he says again, like three or four more times.
And asshole.
Yeah, asshole.
Asshole!
Oh yeah.
Every time he's driving.
When he's driving and he makes an accident happen.
Yep.
He screams asshole. Oh yeah.
And he's driving on the wrong
twice
side of the road.
He makes an accident happen from that.
I think also, I don't think we mentioned it earlier, but like the locket is important because it has the key to the safe deposit box in it, which Ken hid in the fish tank, but
they happened to see.
Jamie Lee Curtis saw it. Otto pretended he was gay to distract Ken. And Jamie Lee Curtis took it out and put it in her locket.
But she doesn't tell him. Does she tell Otto that she sees that?
No.
Like, that already is setting the seeds of a distrust there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, she doesn't tell him he has the key. But it's also interesting because Otto immediately goes, I need to get Ken out of here so she can do something. Like, it's like there's a great, again, it goes back to their own expertise in their own field. Like, he knows, I need to get Ken out of here. He doesn't know why, because she doesn't tell him.
Yeah.
But he just gets Ken out of there and does this whole, you think, pretends I'm gay kind of thing, which is super, just, again, another thing you probably couldn't do.
Yeah.
Like later on in the movie when he screams, isn't that ass beautiful? Don't go near him. He's mine. Like you can't do that.
Yeah.
But it worked perfectly in this movie because it made Ken so uncomfortable.
Okay. So we
Where are we?
Let's see. Where are we in the movie? Okay. So Wanda goes to Archie's house and Hilarity ensues when the wife and daughter end up with a flat tire and they have to come back to the house.
Oh, that reveal is so perfect.
And they do a perfect little hiding game.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, of course, Otto has to follow and make sure that she doesn't touch his dick.
Yep.
And comes in and also sweeps in and says,
I'm with the FBI.
The CIA. I'm Harvey Manfringensingen.
And that they've got a KGB agent in a safe house. And, of course, then we reveal that Archie's wife.
Oh, God.
Her father was in the Secret Service, and you know that. Why would you tell people?
And the way she just goes, my father was in the Secret Service, Manfringensingen, and I know. Like, she just says his fake name with absolute perfection.
Yes.
Oh, so great.
And somehow they get out, but Wanda has left behind her locket. Wendy finds the locket and thinks it's meant for her, and apparently some sort of passionate lovemaking happens.
Yeah, like reignites their love in
Wendy,
a way.
Wendy thinks that this is a rekindling of their affections. And it's just so funny to see John Cleese be so uncomfortable and have like that little motive in the back of his head that, okay, this is great. I'm finally getting something that I actually kind of want, but I want that necklace back.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's funny to see his wife like perk up when she sees it. And then all of a sudden that turns on the passion.
Like, it's the most beautiful thing she's ever had. Really?
And I think it's because the W. Like, she says it's got a W on it, which is for Wanda, but she's like, oh, you personalized it, which is must be something they've never done before.
I guess. Well, they do sleep in separate beds.
They do.
Yet they don't have their initials above it like Bert and Ernie.
If everyone was more like Bert and Ernie, the world would be a better place.
It would. So, of course, this all ignites. Otto can see something's going on. And that this might be something a little more between Archie and Wanda than just a con, or at least in his mind, that he decides he's going to, you know, dangle Archie out a window and take out his frustrations upon Archie.
Oh, when they meet up again at the other flat.
Yes.
Everything that happens in the other flat is just comedic gold.
Oh,
just
God.
All of it is
everything that can go wrong really does go.
And there's so many just hilarious visual moments when they're upstairs and they're just going at it and you just see Otto and he's stealing that scene. Like it's their scene, and just anything that he's doing in the window while he's watching them is just hilarious perfection.
Do you think partly maybe John Cleese wrote this so he could make out with Jamie Lee Curtis?
I mean,
would you blame him?
No, I mean, not at all.
I wouldn't blame him. I mean, it's a terrible reason to write a movie, but if you're going to write a movie to make out with a beautiful woman, at least write a good movie. So, I mean, but yeah, I think that sounded horrible.
You could argue that her being so amazing inspired him to write such a good movie to make it worthy of her.
So we're trying to figure out where. Okay, so we have the key. She has the key, but they have no idea what it goes to. She's had it identified and they tell her it's for a box. It's for a safety deposit box. Don't know where.
Mm-hmm.
And they realize that the only person that knows where it goes is the one person who probably cannot articulate it very well, which would be Ken.
Well, I think Ken doesn't find out until later. I think he only hides the key initially.
Oh, yeah, because he says he doesn't know.
Yeah, when she kisses him earlier on, when she first steals the key, and he loses his stutter completely. It's a key. I don't know what it's for.
And she, I think we skipped over this, but she did. She goes to visit, what's his face in the
George.
Oh, George, yeah.
She goes to visit him and try and get out of him. And he's very much like, don't worry. I'm taking care of us. Mm-hmm. It's in a safe place. So it genuinely to me doesn't seem like he's planning on double crossing her. I think he just wants Otto out of the picture, and he's using Ken until he doesn't need him anymore and plans on double crossing him.
Yeah.
And just go off with Wanda too. Mm-hmm. Now we find out, eventually we find out they're going off to Rio.
Yeah, that was their plan, everyone to go to Rio. And I think George definitely, I think he loves Wanda. I think there's part of him that doesn't fully trust her, but I think he thinks he's good enough that he can win.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But I think hiding the jewels a second time was more about Otto than it was about Wanda.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't really know Otto and he doesn't trust him.
No.
So, yeah, I think that was more about
that. But he still thinks he's his brother.
Yeah, he's still buying that old song and dance.
Ooh, George is not the smallest or the smartest guy.
Nor is he the smallest.
Nor he's not the smallest, no. But so then we kind of talked about it already, but let's talk about Ken and killing.
Oh, God.
Killing.
Oh, Ken. He tries so hard.
He tries so hard. And I was reading also when they were doing the scenes where they would kill off the dogs, they would use entrails from a butcher shop.
Yeah.
And the test audience thought it was way too graphic. That, you know, that's the one thing. It's like, no. I don't want this to be a realistic death.
Yeah,
no,
it needs to be not realistic. It felt like...
To be like, oh, that's a dummy.
Yeah.
That's a straw.
It almost felt like they intentionally made the deaths as cartoon-like. I mean, like literally one of the dogs gets like essentially a safe dropped on them as if it's Looney Tunes.
It's so funny. His little head turns and then it lands on him. Yeah, it was so great because you put the character, like, you know, every character is put in some kind of peril to do something that they don't want to do or something they don't feel capable of doing.
Yeah.
Like for Otto, later on, he has to apologize and that's not something he can do. But for Ken, he's an animal lover. So, and also just in general, he's a lover. He's not a mean person, but to have him try to murder someone and then subsequently and accidentally kill three dogs is just, it's comedy gold. Like the first one with the Rottweiler that grabs the dog and runs away.
And she's holding funerals for these dogs.
Two little Vienna boys choirs singing like a Latin song that like translates to "the dog is dead."
He's going to every single funeral and he's wearing like an armband of mourning.
She never puts together the fact that this guy is always around when her dogs are dead.
Well, the second dog murder, he's got his
Rasta wig on. And he paints his truck to look different. He paints his car to look different.
But finally, he does accomplish his goal.
Indirectly.
Yeah, when the dog gets squished, she has a heart attack because of the trauma of losing her third and final dog.
But he wins. He succeeds, and you're almost cheering for him.
Yeah, and oh god, just every method of trying to kill her is so vastly different. Like, I guess like the first one you get, like he's got the Rottweiler, so he wants the Rottweiler to kill her. The second time, is he just going to run her over? Is that his plan? And then the third one, he's got a sniper rifle aimed at a pulley system instead of just like, oh, I'll just shoot her in the head, like, which would not be funny.
No.
But him being like, oh, I'll shoot this thing that will drop this giant thing on top of her that will seem like an accident. So,
the big thing is he wants it to seem like an accident so that, you know, he kind of, it won't be suspicious when George
Yeah, exactly. She's like, she died of a freak accident.
Oh, it just happened. Now she has a heart attack, which is truly, truly perfect.
Now and his injuries getting worse each time too was a nice touch because like
his face from the Rottweiler.
And then he has his eye covered from the car accident, and just like he ends up just looking worse and worse as the movie goes on.
He gets more injured than she does.
Yeah,
they're gonna take one. So Ken talks to George and finally says, you know, okay, we're going to retrieve the loot, and finally tells Ken where everything's going to be, but that we're going to take everybody, but we're going to ditch Otto at some point. We're going to eliminate Otto. Otto figures out, or Ken knows where the loot is, and then the torture scene.
Oh, yeah.
Now, the funny thing I read was that Kevin Kline was totally okay with eating fish live, but these were Jell-O. They were fake. But he was like, if you need me to, I'll do it.
That's who he is.
Because
he's the greatest actor of all time.
He buys into it. And he's going to do it. But luckily, I think probably at some point the SPCA is like, you're killing dogs and you're eating fish live.
Live fish from a tank.
We need to talk about the whole cruelty thing that we need to put at the end. I think we need to make some adjustments. That whole scene, how long do you think they probably went on for that this got edited down to this?
Oh, God, because if all those fish were in the tank, if they filmed one for every fish, which they could have, who knows, but God.
It's like an entire day of filming.
That's one day of filming is just the auto torturing Ken and eating fish scene.
But just do you kind of? I'm kind of squeamish about him eating the fish.
I honestly, I was okay until he got to that angelfish at the end.
Oh, yeah. Wanda, yeah. And you can see the fins hanging out of the mouth.
And he's just talking, and it's like slapping his lower lip.
Oh, God. It just goes back to the character of Otto knowing how to torture and knowing what he needs to do. Like, I need to torture Ken. I need this information. What does he love? These fish. I'm going to kill him.
And then on top of it all, the key's not there.
Oh, yeah. Oh, poor Ken, who was so convinced it was there. He was so convinced.
It was, but he didn't know.
And it was good that, like, the Otto even had a line, too, that was like, you really did think it was there, though, which was kind of like, I mean, he still ate Wanda, but at least he was like, oh, you didn't try to screw me. Like, you didn't try.
Yeah.
Which was interesting.
You honestly, somebody has screwed you.
There's a, I don't know if you read this, but there's a story about, like, the chips up the nose, where he put the chips up his nose.
Yes!
Like, did somebody laugh themselves to death in a theater watching that scene?
In Denmark.
Yeah. Apparently it's a true story.
Yeah. I was reading about that, too. I was like, oh, my God. The guy had actually told a story, or he had a thing with his family, where it was trying, with cauliflower.
Yeah.
And I put it on here. That it was a joke that he had with his family, that he put a piece of cauliflower up his and every family member's nose, and made a bet who could eat up their carrots without the cauliflower falling out. So when he sees the scene with Ken getting the chips put up his nose, it made him remember that incident and how funny it was, and he laughed himself to the point where his heart rate got up to the point and he had a heart attack and died there.
There's just so many things about that. I'm just trying to imagine, like, being a kid and my mom being like, all right, everybody, time to put your cauliflower up your nose.
Eat your carrots before it falls out. That's not what Julie's mom sounds like, by the way. That was just an impression of a general mom.
And you need to put a Danish accent. Because it wasn't Denmark.
Denmark? I don't know. I gotta put the curly flare up your nose.
Put the curly flare up your nose. Put on your wooden shoes.
Put your wooden shoes on. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm just going
to
stop trying.
Let's go to the IKEA. Oh, no, that's Swedish.
Offensive.
They're all over there.
Stammerers and the
Swedes.
The Danish. The Dutch.
So now we go to court. We get to see Archie in his wigged glory.
Oh, such a great wig.
And we do Wanda's testimony. And she somehow is just that crafty that she can make it sound like she's kind of on the same side, but not. Oh, I've actually been waiting for this scene. I wanted to see her in court so badly to see what is she going to say? She doesn't want him out of jail. How is she going to do that, but not screw herself because she still doesn't know where everything is.
Yeah.
How does she do that? And she pulls it off. And Wendy actually shows up for the first time to any of Archie's.
Yeah. We didn't mention that earlier. Wendy caught wind of Archie and Wanda's affair because Otto went to apologize, which we didn't talk about either. The apology scene.
Oh, yes.
Where Wanda makes him go apologize because he dangled him out a window. And when he shows up to apologize, which he can't do, Archie is robbing his own house to try to get the locket back so he can give it back to Wanda. So Archie sees the robber and kicks the shit out of him, only to find out that it's
Archie.
And then is like, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. But then later on ends up going back to his house and tells him, hey, if you want to fuck my sister, go ahead.
While holding
a gun to his face. That's how good he is at apologies. And Wendy overhears all of that.
Yeah.
So that's kind of like, so she's pissed. But rightfully so.
Oh, yeah. But you still don't care.
I don't know. I loved this time around watching it after when Wanda does her, where's he going with the sawed off shotgun? And the whole fight breaks out in the courtroom. And when Wendy comes over and slaps Archie, this time around, I was like, yeah, you deserve that. Like, every other time I was like, he got slapped. Now I'm like, no, you deserved it. Like, you're not a good dude.
What would you say about your life has changed that's made you feel that way?
I think I have a newly found respect for marriage and the sanctity of marriage and a new hatred of John Cleese. No. But no, as a kid, I just don't think I really took in, or even as like a teenager growing up, and then in my 20s watching this movie, because I've watched it throughout my life, it never really dawned on me, like, oh, yeah, she should be mad at him because he's a terrible cheater.
Yeah.
It's like one of my other favorite movies, which is actually a 70s movie and originally was a play called Same Time Next Year.
Oh, I love that.
Oh, play. It's wonderful. Oh. It's a wonderful love story.
But it's all about cheating.
But it's two people cheating on their respective spouses.
Over
26 years.
Yeah.
And like watching it, I go, oh man, I love these people and what they're going through. But like, no, they're breaking their marriage vows. Like it's really hard when you realize that. And you're like,
yeah.
Oh, how are they making these immoral people? Or people making an immoral choice. We don't know they're immoral people.
Yeah.
Like Fish Called Wanda, they're immoral people.
Oh, yeah.
We know that for sure. Even Archie is very immoral as well because mm-hmm. he is happily breaking his marriage vows to sleep with this American girl that he just met.
Who wears glasses and just looks hot in a denim dress.
Pretty much.
That's pretty much her only qualification.
I do have to say it's interesting in the courtroom because it's kind of a small courtroom and like they're all there. And at no point does Otto or Ken or Wendy like acknowledge that, even though like at least two of them have met at some point. So
oh,
I
yeah.
just that was something about the scene that I was like, we're not gonna talk.
Nope.
We're... Suspension of disbelief. There.
So pretty much we get the fight breaking out in the courtroom. Pretty much we know George is screwed. George is done.
Yeah.
At this point, George is gonna be out of the story. We know he's not. He's not getting out, and we know that, all right, something's going to happen that these characters are all now going to scatter to the wind. Archie does have another meeting after he gets hit on the head and strikes a deal with George to get a lesser sentence and convinces him to tell him where the diamonds are. So now Archie is part of the heist.
Yeah, he kind of becomes part of it.
Archie has gone from, law-abiding citizen to criminal. Very quickly, all because of Wanda.
Yeah. Criminal and adulterer.
Yes. Archie catches Wanda trying to sneak off, and he takes her to George's flat. They try to possibly face off against Otto. Really? I don't want to meet Otto in a dark alley. Otto's going to win.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's got that element of, that I don't know if you were given this instruction when you were in high school, but I was taught if you were going to get in a fight, act crazy.
It's good advice.
Just go straight to crazy. Because then nobody knows what you're going to do. Don't act mad. Don't act scared. Just act batshit crazy. And I think that definitely that was a choice that Otto
took. Yeah, Otto's
Otto
completely unhinged.
Ooh, completely. We get Wanda and Otto retrieving the diamonds, getting their tickets to Rio, because apparently that's where you run off to in the 80s.
Yep.
Nobody goes to Canada.
Ah, go to Rio.
It's always like Rio or South America, someplace in South America, because the money, nobody asks questions.
Yeah, it seems like that's where you go if you're going to commit some white collar crime.
Yeah. So we get to the scene where they are at the airport.
Mm.
And Archie gets to get into the oil.
Oh,
and
God.
Otto gets to deliver his diatribe about the English. Mike, you're loving that scene, aren't you?
Oh, I'm loving that scene. And like, when he tricks him into the fake boxing match when he's like, put down, let's fight like men. And then he picks up his gun and makes him go outside. Like, you would think, like, in every movie when you watch someone with a standoff where they're going to kill someone, it's like, just shoot them. Just shoot them and get it over with. But in this movie, even in that moment, like, the way Archie baits him to just keep him talking, like, it makes sense for the character that Otto is. Like, Otto would want to get the last word. It wouldn't just be, goodbye, Archie. Like, because he kept saying that, and then Otto's going, oh, you're going to shoot me now? Like, Otto can't just go, yeah, bang. He can't do it. It's not in his nature. He needs to be the one to go, oh, sorry, other chap, and like push it farther. So Archie knows how to do that. And just thankfully, Ken decided to get a steamroller at that moment.
Oh, God.
And come run him over and bought him just enough time. And he stepped in the wet cement and got stuck. Oh, it's so
good. And again,
great.
That's another moment of like Otto having to, like, he's literally being run over by a steamroller and like he's still can't fully swallow his pride and just apologize.
Yep.
And I made a note that this is now the second movie where someone has gotten run over by a steamroller and not died.
Mm-hmm.
First one being Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Yeah.
But I'm now seeing, now that we've done so many movies, I'm starting to notice patterns.
Ah.
And that is definitely one of them that...
In the 80s, steamrollers could kill no one.
Steamrollers really couldn't. Even there was one, I was watching the other day, Steve Martin, his special from 1982.
Oh, okay.
And it's where he's drunk riding the steamroller, and he rolls over a kid who's playing with a ball that rolls into the street, and he rolls over this kid. He's just like, and he rolls over this kid with a steamroller. And all it does is make a flat copy of the kid that is then just kind of picked up off the ground by Regis Philbin. And that's it. And it's like, this is why people don't drive drunk in steamrollers. There was a thing in the 80s about the fascination of his steamroller.
Interesting.
And yeah. I think that's going to have to be a special now. I'm going to have to make a steamroller special of the Grady's, because it seems to be something that is being repeated throughout the 80s, that a steamroller is a fascination. Now we get to the point where Ken gets arrested, and he can finally get words out. Like, he's let it all go.
All of that aggression towards Otto.
He's run over with a steamroller.
Tharsis.
Yeah.
And we end up with Wanda running off with Archie.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in the original ending of this, it wasn't going to be a happy ending. She was going to run off with Archie and then knock him over the head and leave.
Is that what the original ending was?
That was the original ending. It was a really dark ending where, you know, but when they did it for the test audiences, they decided that they wanted more of a love story. They wanted something to end up happy. And they decide to put Archie and Wanda together. And I confess I did not watch the very, very end of the movie, but I did see some notes from Fierce Creatures that it starts with a letter from Archie. Or Archie, like something about Archie's brother, and you find out what happens to everybody. Like of Ken being at London SeaWorld as an announcer.
At the very end of the movie, they do a postscript.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. But,
and at some point, Otto goes to visit him at SeaWorld, and he gets him kicked out by security.
Is that in First Fierce Creatures? I got to watch that again.
At the very, very beginning, they actually pick up off of the storyline from A Fish Called Wanda.
Funny.
That Archie and Wanda have had multiple children.
Mm-hmm.
Otto leaves South Africa after apartheid has fallen, but tries to go to visit Ken at London SeaWorld. It was just really interesting of I haven't seen Fierce Creatures, so
it's a fun movie. It
I haven't
really
seen
is.
It either.
Like not to go too deep, but the premise of the movie is it's a zoo, and it's owned by Kevin Kline. Does double duty in this movie. He plays a character named Rod McCain, and he plays Rod McCain's son. But Rod McCain is an Australian business owner who buys a zoo, buys like a thing of zoos, and like Kevin Kline is his screw up son that comes to run it. But he brings in Jamie Lee Curtis, who is like an expert in running businesses. John Cleese is like the zookeeper. And Michael Palin is like the kangaroo enthusiast or something. Like, but they're playing great, fun characters. Kevin Kline gets to impersonate his father in the movie, like, which is really fun. Like, because his father has an accident, and he has to pretend to be him at one point. So he's in bad makeup of the character he's already played. Like, it's fun stuff.
But in general, I think it has somewhat of a happy ending.
Yeah.
At least for most of them.
And it goes back to what we were saying earlier, where you're rooting for the terrible people to succeed. Like, everyone is just so terrible, you're kind of rooting for the least terrible. Like, you want things to work out between Archie and Wanda.
Mm-hmm.
So this is where I have an issue. And it's I didn't have it until my most recent watch through, because I just up until this point I've just bought that Archie and Wanda are together. What is it about Archie that makes Wanda want to be with him? And I've had a hard time. I've been struggling with that. And I was thinking about it today because I'm like, everything she does up until a certain point, you're like, this is what she would do to get what she wants.
Yeah.
Is it because he rejected her? Because at one point he breaks it off and he says, I have to end this. And then in the car, when they're running back to the apartment to try to escape, she says to him, why did you dump me? So is the only reason they're together is because he stood up to her, and maybe she's never had that. I I wanted more from her now in retrospect.
Yeah.
To know why all of a sudden she's like, yeah, I'm going to settle down with this guy.
But I think that has a lot to do with it, because I think she, in watching the way she maneuvers through life in this movie, she pretty much can call her own shots. And when he rejects her, it's suddenly an unknown that she hasn't prepared for.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's something that she didn't know she wanted in life, that she goes to that.
And to, I mean, in a sense, he made her work for it, because as soon as he found out her name and that she was one of the witnesses, he was like, okay, I'm putting the kibosh on this. Like, you have to leave, all of that.
So, maybe it is because she probably just walked up to Otto and said, hey, sleep with me. And he was like, okay. Like, yeah. George, probably the same thing. She could probably get whatever she wanted, but with this guy, she had to work for it. I wonder if, because I didn't know that about the original ending, about Archie getting knocked out.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if, because that ending wasn't popular, they just changed it and said, great, we'll just throw these little postscripts up. Like, maybe that's why it feels to me like there isn't a compelling enough reason, at least played out in the film, for her to go with Archie.
I think,
on the long term.
I think there's a compelling enough reason for her to go with him, because I think we've established about these characters that they're following their impulse and their gut desires. So you could argue that her gut desire is to go to Rio and have this money, and if him going with her is going to make her happy for a little while, that's fine.
Yeah.
Like, she doesn't necessarily need him to propose to her or anything like that.
Yeah.
I agree with that. I definitely agree with that. I think now hearing this about the new ending, I imagine that ending that they threw up there, like them having 17 children and living in a leper colony, to me is a joke. Like, there's no way she does that. I don't think so. I think after a couple of years, she goes, hey, I've had enough of you, and goes on to do something else. Because Archie is kind of a boring character in a lot of ways, who's only now, I mean, we don't know. Again, it kind of goes back to what I was saying earlier at the beginning. We don't know their pre-story. Mm-hmm. We don't necessarily need to know their post-story.
And you don't know if he's necessarily just a product of his environment, and if the environment changes.
Yeah. Maybe he comes to life. Yeah.
It leaves a lot, but it does kind of make you, especially at the end, you just kind of go, I kind of wanted to see more.
Well, I think one place where you can have a point of comparison of his environment versus what's happening to him with Wanda is they do this great scene where you see him going to bed with Wendy. And you see him taking off his clothes very carefully and them folding them and doing all of that. And then later when he's in the flat with Wanda, he's just ripping off his clothes and all of that. So if you just compare that small action, there's something there.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so much development that you may not see off screen. That it's just, why a leper kill?
Yeah, I imagine that's the Monty Python element to me. That's that's, you know, John Cleese going, you know what's going to be funny? They started a leper colony. Like, that's Monty Python to me.
Yeah. We jumped around a lot because there's so much that happens in this movie.
It's hard to recap this movie because there's so much involved.
And it's one of those movies that little nuggets come back to you every time you watch it. You go, oh, I didn't notice this. I didn't notice this.
Mm-hmm.
Luckily, there are people on the internet who have watched it multiple times and have taken notes.
Yay.
Now, I don't put a lot of stock in critics or anything, but the fact that this got a 93 on Rotten Tomatoes is pretty damn good. I think it's a pretty generally held... I have never met anybody who didn't like this movie.
Me either.
It's one of those movies where it almost makes it easier to talk about because there's nothing you don't like about this movie.
I mean, we were... probably still in the credit scene where we were introducing the characters, and I turned to him and I said, okay, this movie has held up. Like, it's very clever, and like we have already discussed, there are certainly elements that couldn't be recreated in this modern era, and I almost think that's a good thing, that because that means it'll be protected from being treated with a horrible remake down the road. I hope.
Yeah. Well, I think the hard thing that I have of most 80s movies that when they try to remake them today is that every 80s movie would be ruined by a cell phone.
Yeah.
All you would need is that ability to be able to communicate in a timely manner and instantly with text messages or phones. I think that negates any kind of remakes. So anybody thinking about rebooting anything from the 80s, don't ruin my childhood because we own cell phones.
Mm-hmm. I think there should be a rule. If you're going to reboot an 80s movie, it has to take place in the 80s. Yeah. I think you, like, they did that with It, the new It. It doesn't. Yeah. It takes place in the 90s, but it was. I was worried. I'm like, is it going to be modern day? And I was like, oh, it's not. It's the 90s, so the kids don't have cell phones. They don't have any of that stuff, and it's great.
Okay, so let's go into our reviews now that we've talked about everything. So, Mike, what is your rating system then versus now?
Okay, I'm going to call it the Jamie Lee Curtis hot scale. Because that's one of the big takeaways I had the first time I watched it. And that and Kevin Kline and Jamie Lee Curtis are two things that I definitely took away from that movie. One was, wow, Jamie Lee Curtis, she's really pretty. And oh, I'm watching her in her underwear with my dad. This is weird. but also watching Kevin Kline and be like, that's an actor. Like, that's what I want to do that. Like, that's what I realized. The first time I watched it, I remember loving the movie, not getting most of it, but just really liking how it made me feel.
Uh-huh.
So nowadays, watching it again, there are so many things that at the time I didn't understand, but now with a deeper understanding of it, it's better than when I first watched it. So as a kid, I would say it was probably a 4. I would say it was a 4. And as an adult, it goes to 5 for me. There's so much more in that movie that I find every time that I watch it. And the characters are so memorable. The writing is sharp. It's even though it takes place in the 80s, it doesn't feel dated.
Yeah.
It feels like it could be modern because it's not about the world. It's about the people. And that's, I think, what makes a huge difference. So yeah, 5 out of 5 now. Versus a 4 out of 5 when I was a kid.
Julie?
This is why I like to order first at the recipe or at the restaurant, because it feels like I'm copying Mike.
Boo.
But in watching it last night, I found so much more to appreciate in terms of the writing and the comedy and just all of the acting. So I would say the first time I saw it, I didn't fully know what was going on because someone that was very enthusiastic about the movie was talking about the movie over the movie.
That was me.
So I would say probably the first time I watched it, I'm going to give it a 3.75, mainly so I'm not copying Mike. but now I would give it a solid 5. And now I'm so interested in watching that again straight into Fierce Creatures.
Yeah.
Because I think that would be a cool back-to-back movie experience.
And so far, I think now going third, it's kind of like sloppy thirds. I don't think I really fully appreciated the rest of the movie outside of Kevin Kline. because it is just, like I said, he has such magnetism. You just are sucked into that one character. But now I kind of paid attention to the other characters. And especially after Dave's comment about Jamie Lee Curtis, I was like, wait a second. I want to see if this really, she's not bad. She's pretty good. I would probably have given it a 4. No, I would have given it a 5 because it was Kevin Kline. So I would have given it a 5 and I stick to it. If I could go to 11, I would.
Nice.
So I think we pretty much have one of our only second perfect scores on the show, where it definitely holds up.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. It's kind of one of those timeless movies where you can't really sit and if you pick at it and go, okay, they don't have cell phones and they don't have computers, it really doesn't matter. It doesn't matter to the plot. It doesn't matter other than this story of the heist and their relationships. And I think that's indicative of every single person I've ever talked to regarding this movie. So thank you, Mike, for choosing this movie.
You're welcome.
Thank you for joining us on the Greaties, the Great 80s Movie Debate. And let us know your opinions on this movie. What do you think of Fish Called Wanda and Fierce Creatures? and join the Kevin Kline Appreciation Society like the rest of us.
You're welcome to join.
Please check out our Facebook and our Twitter page, which I don't have anything to do with because I don't know anything about Twitter. But Dave maintains it, so, you know, we keep it going. So thank you for joining us, and please stay tuned for our next episode of the Best of Fives, where we will be following up on our love of Kevin Kline and our top 5 Kevin Kline movies. Thanks for listening.
Guys, I just got a text from Total Wine. They dropped their sponsorship.
Damn. Ah, fuck.
They have Danish wine, too.
We've still got Bed Danish Bath & Beyond, though.
Oh, yes.
And their fuck pillow.
Hashtag fuck pillow. But you know what? I think the argument needs to be made at some point. Somebody got to go to Canada. There are criminals in Canada. They're very polite, but they do go to Canada.
They do, absolutely.
I do want to. That's going to be my challenge: is to find a movie where they run off to Canada.
Hmm.
If you want to avoid a war, you go to Canada. But if you've stolen a large bunch of money, you go to South America.
Naturally.
I guess. I don't know.
That's the '80s were a different time.